Want to welcome to Best Year in Trading Strategies. This event is brought to you by Timing Research and Trade Out Loud. David Cosmador and I, Ankamit Kaff, will be your hosts today. With us today, we have a lineup of fantastic traders. First, Jim Kenny of optionsprofessor.com that is very excited to start sharing some new information with us. We have Maria Villatoro of thetraderchick.com. We have Barry Burns of Top Dog Trading. And we also have Mark Sachs of rightlinetrading.com and myself. So before we begin, let me remind you that all information provided today is for educational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice regarding the purchase or sale of securities, options, futures, forex, or any other instrument of any kind. Trading involves a high level of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. You could lose money. So before deciding to trade, you should carefully consider your objectives, level of experience, and risk appetite. Individual performance depends on each person's skills, time commitment, and effort. Results may not be typical, and individual results will vary. You must do your own research and make your own trading decisions. Jim, if you're ready, you have the mic. And first of all, thank you so much for accepting our invitation. And whenever you're ready and everything is set, I see on your side, you have the mic.
Okay. Thank you, Anka. And I couldn't have done an intro better than that because disclosure is a very important part. We're going to be sharing our views and our observations and our opinions today. So keep it in context. With regards to myself, I am Jim Kenny, the content provider at optionprofessor.com. And it is bright and early in the morning out here in the desert. Sun's just coming up, so it's a good start to the day. The title here today, I'm going to be going over quite a bit of information, so if you can take notes, that'd be great. But, the best end-of-year strategies is the theme here. And I'm just going to say what's on my mind right off the bat, and the best year-end strategy really comes down to answering a question. Should I be hedging myself up here at these levels? Should I be doing anything to protect my gains, or should I just see a fish run in the ocean and let the line go out? For all you fishermen, you know what I'm talking about, and let the fish keep going until it shows signs of wearing, and then, of course, reel in the fish once it gets weary. Well, let's just take a look at what's going on and try to figure out what the best case might be there. Obviously, it's on a specific stock-to-stock basis, but I'm going to give you some insights right now on what I'm seeing. So on the SPX, right, what's going on with the SPX is we went up and we tried to take out the high of 31.54 today. Can you see Friday was 31.50? So we failed to take out the high, and we did close down at 31.45. Very strong day, but how could it not be with a $266,000 job report, increased job report, when they were looking for 180 and ADP in the middle of the week had it around 80. So obviously this was a shocker. So say you were short the market or had a negative position, you certainly were covering. And when the whole world knows you're covering, you think they're going to give you a good price? No, they're going to raise the offer up to the highest possible price legally they can and get everybody out. And then, of course, next week, we'll have to see if these levels can be sustained or improved upon. But clearly, Friday's action is not surprising because of the report that came out. Now, next week, obviously, you know, you can't sell into markets into ad infinitum. So anything that's making higher highs on a daily, weekly basis that you're selling, obviously, you're standing in front of a freight train, and that's not going to end up too well most of the time. So obviously, I've been suggesting to people that be patient. And when the market stops making daily and weekly highs, then you have a point to trade against if that's your cup of tea. Now, the key here is we have December 15th coming up next Sunday, I guess it is. Is it next Sunday? So are tariffs going to be put on or not? Well, you know, again, if President Trump thinks he's playing with quote-unquote house money, he's certainly got plenty of house money to play with now. And we got the Fed, who obviously thinks they're playing with house money because they're printing it. And the likelihood of them doing anything at their meeting this week is very close to zero. So you got the Fed out of the picture, and you got President Trump in a situation where does he want to look like a tough negotiator, and does he want to put the tariffs on, or is he going to be Santa Claus and delay them or something like that? A big question. But right now you can see we are at elevated levels. Now I'm going to pull the lens back, and let's look at this thing on a 3-year basis. And on a 3-year baby, you can see yes, and higher highs. Got a little tail there from last out when they thought there was no trade deal. That could be telling you if this market were to roll over and the who's going to want to buy if there's a reason to get out. Not too many, maybe. So you could get a precipitous drop. That's a problem. That's why the VIX went from 11 up to 18 this week and then back down into the 13s. Now, why am I looking at it on a longer term basis? Because these are the couple things that have been bothering me. Okay, let's take a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Transportation Average. Okay, these are the companies that move us around, right? Transportation and goods and services. Okay, so what do we see here? In 2018, stock market hit a high of around 2950, 3000, whatever, and this thing confirmed it by going up to its all-time high right here, right? 11,700, something like that, right? Then it has a big drop in December, just like the stock market does, and then the stock market goes up and makes new highs. But where's the new high on the transport? I don't see it, right? And that's concerning to me, because generally you'd like to see the transport confirming the move, not as you can see, it's well underneath down here. Even with the 100-point move on Friday, it's still at 10.7, and that number's at 11.7, okay? All right, the other thing is the Russell. Now, the Russell's been gaining a lot of momentum lately, so obviously it's the financials and the biotechs and the things that are in the Russell obviously are very, very on the move, popping to 2-week highs, which is seducing people into thinking it's going to take up to do. So there's no evidence to that right now. And this number here of 1650, which is this former low, could very well be the line in the sand that it can't get through, unless we get more stimulus news-wise to keep this thing going even further, which is possible. So what am I concerned about? I'm concerned about that the transports is nowhere near their high from 2018, and I'm also concerned that the Russell is nowhere near its high from 2018, which means these highs that we're seeing, in my view, are unconfirmed by the caps and unconfirmed by the transportation, and that can be a problem. So let's take a look at a stock like Apple. Now, on Apple, you're looking at a situation where it's gone to the roof, 140 to 260 in a short period of time. That's gone to the roof, right? So let's take a look behind the under the hood, as they say, and let's take a look at where the 200-day moving average is. Well, the 200-day moving average is at 210. So if I take 270 minus your 210, I get $60, right? If I take $60 and I divide it into 210, I get just under 30% above its 200-day moving average. And, I would say that that's fairly extended. And so is it possible that we could get some kind of a rollover to fill in the gap between the moving average and the price? And if Apple were to go down 10 or 15%, would the S&P probably go down as well? Well, it's a big part of all the indexes, so I would imagine it would not be helpful. So again, that's just an isolated incident, but it's another thing that makes me a little bit concerned. Big bellwether, kind of overbought technically, basis to 200-day. You've got the Russell, while strong, still well underneath. And while you've got the S&P making a new high, we didn't take out this week's high. But again, you got to be patient because you can't stand in front of a freight train. So first step is stop making new daily highs. Second step is new weekly highs. And then you've got some price evidence that there's some exhaustion. Up until that point, you have no price evidence of exhaustion, and guessing is not a really good strategy. So that's my overview. Now, if you were to stop making new highs, and you were thinking that a correction might be going on, and you were thinking that Santa Claus is not going to be as happy as he is, you could look to a few types of texts. One would be covered already. Now, obviously, if you do an out-of-the-money call on, say, Apple, this is a theoretical example only, but a basic example. The stock's at 270. Say you sold the 290 calls. Well, the 290 calls would mean you're giving up the right to own Apple. You're obviously obligating to sell Apple at 290. And you're going to get a premium on top of that. So you got 20 more bucks on top of the stock plus a premium before you would have opportunity risk, which is above your strike price plus the premium. Okay? So can you live with something like that? And that money you take in would reduce your risk from 270 by whatever the premium is. So covered call writing might be something to consider. And you can adjust positions. If it went up to 290, you could buy it back and roll it up to another one, which means you buy back the 290 and sell the 310 or whatever you decide. So there is ways to adjust the position as you go on. But covered call writing would be one tactic to consider if you think that the market might be frothy. Now, second thing to do, which is a more protective strategy, is rather than just trying to keep that premium on the 290 call, you sell the call at 290 in this theoretical example, and you take the premium and you buy a put underneath. Let's say you bought a put at 260, just to use a number. That means you have the right to sell at the obligation to deliver stock at 290. So you've got your stock bracketed. 290 is your maximum upside and 260 is your downside until the options expire. Now, if we're to go back to 220 or 250 or 230, obviously you would have hedged everything but the 10 bucks between 270 and 260. Not too shabby. And that premium you took, obviously you don't get to keep that because you spent it. But if the market stayed in between 2 points, you'd be no worse for the wear because you would have kept the premium on 290 if it never goes up there. And you would have lost it on the 260 put if it never goes down. So you're still in the same position, meaning you're holding the stock. So the collar strategy is something to be aware of as well. Now, finally, if you've been in the stock for any length of time, you're either up 50 bucks, 70 bucks, or 120 bucks if you've been in there for any length of time since the beginning of the year. So why would you not possibly donate a little bit of that run-up into just a married put where you buy a put against the stock? Then you're only impeding your upside, but whatever you paid on the premium. So say, just to use a number, you bought the 260 put for $5. Well, that means you are impeding your progress up to 275 because it would have to get above 275 to pay for that put, right? Now, if it goes down, you have the 260 strike minus the $5 it cost you. So you're hedged at 255. So in that case, the married put gives you pure protection at the strike minus the premium cost. And it does not impede your upside, but to the degree that you paid for the premium. So what does that all mean? What it means is there's a couple of different things. The other thing people sometimes do is they sell out shares that they're up 50, 60, 70 bucks on, and then they replace. So this is called a replacement trade, where you're going to, let's just say you were in it since 150. You're up 120 bucks. If you sell out at 270, you got 120 bucks in your pocket. What are you going to do? Well, you're probably concerned that it's going to go to 300 or 350 like everybody's banging these drums right now. So how are you going to hedge yourself against that? Well, the way you hedge it is you buy a call. Now, let's say you bought a call at 280 for $5. If it goes up to 300, that 280 call is worth 20 bucks minus the five. You're up 15 on that. But if the thing goes back to 260, 240, 230, 220 on a correction, you lose the premium up there at 280, $5. But all that other 120 bucks you took off the table still in your pocket, and you can re-enter the stock at a lower level if that's what happens. So there's a number of things you can do to try to, let's say, adjust the risk. That's what I would call it, adjust the risk. But they all have a unique use and they all have a unique risk to them. So if you have any questions on that type of a thing, optionprofessor@gmail.com is the email to use. And if you have a question I can answer, I'll certainly help you with it. And then you obviously should talk to your broker, your advisor, and everybody else to make sure whatever you're doing is suitable for you. And there are other factors to consider, but those are some of the basic steps on how someone might protect equity at these areas if they thought that this 3150 to 3200 area might be it on the short run. Again, we saw during the week that things can unfold rather quickly if there's news to do that, because liquidity is the key here. And you know, and I know, I think, that if there was a real reason to get out of the market and there was algo and public selling, there would be a considerable liquidity or, shall we say, a volume or imbalance. And that's how you get gaps. That's how you get big moves up or down. You have order imbalances, right? Everybody wants in, everybody wants out. The guy on the other side of the trade can see that, and he's basically going to either drop his bid or raise his offer so that he's getting a good deal, under the concept that after all this volume dries up like a rainstorm, the street's going to be dry again. Meaning what? After all this buying volume comes in, you know, there's probably not that kind of volume behind it. And obviously it falls under its own weight if it's been a big run-up, or it'll rise back up as the weight is taken off its shoulders if it's a big sell. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of an idea of what I was thinking as far as best end of year strategies. It's really a decision on whether or not to protect some of these gains, because everyone's getting obviously very giddy and everyone's very happy and everybody doesn't want to sell and everybody's looking to add more. And of course, that environment is not generally what happens at a low point, right? All right. So, and we saw the VIX can certainly come to life very quickly this week. A move from 11 area up to 18 is certainly a pretty good jump. And all we did was drop 50 handles or 70 handles. Imagine if we dropped 150 handles, you know, what it would look like. There's no evidence of that right now. Remember what I said, we have not stopped making new highs, generally speaking, on a weekly and a daily basis. I guess Friday a little bit there, only about a 5-point difference, nothing to write home about. So next week, I think, and the week after are very key. And of course, what they're going to do with these tariffs on the 15th has obviously got everybody sitting at the end of their seat. Now, either put them on, delay them, or get a deal. And if I was going to say, I think A or B is probably the more probable of the three outcomes, you know? Okay. So what happened this week. This week we zoomed up because the unemployment report caught a lot of people by surprise. Big jump, right? And I was showing to you how the Dow and the S&P were trying to press into new highs, but I don't think they did. And I was also showing you how the Russell, while it made a 52-week high, is still well underneath its all-time high. So those are some of the things that I've been watching. And again, the tariff situation. You know, people wonder, how does this market keep going and going? Well, you know, central banks have thrown so much money at this market. I think they said there was 90 cuts in interest rates this year by 45 different central banks since the crash. That's telling you something. I mean, we're at all-time highs, and these guys are slashing interest rates, and they are providing liquidity at an unbelievable level. So obviously, they're very concerned. I mean, anybody looks at a chart, go look at a 10-year chart on the S&P. You see it up at 3,200 almost, and 10 years ago, we were at 600, right? So obviously, has this thing had a big run? You bet it has. Now, is there enough public money to keep this thing going? Well, you know, let's talk about where the money's coming from. Well, the Fed is putting in about $60 billion a month in short-term buying. What are they doing there? They're buying the short-term treasuries. Well, what do you think the intent of that is? To keep money market really low. Why would that be? Because then people can't sit in money market to get their 3, 4, 5, 6% that they need to make, right? So they're forced to go what? Buy into stuff, right? Okay, now, what else do you have? You have the ECB putting up $22 billion a month to keep what? Negative interest rates in Europe, which have done nothing, and these economies over there that are plodding along. They need fiscal stimulus over there. The whole world knows it. And now you've got Christine Lagarde in there, changing of the guard, no pun intended. And you could very well see a situation where she could get maybe Germany or somebody to do a stimulus package. And that would be very, very, be very interesting to see who'd want to hold on to negative yielding bonds if their economies picked up. Just imagine trillions and trillions of dollars of people wanting to get out because who wants a negative yield means you loan me money and I don't even pay you back your principal in 30 years or 20 years or 10 years. That's a joke, right? So again, jokes come to an end, just like no money down on real estate that has already tripled. You know, that was kind of a joke, right? That joke didn't end very well. Or how about the joke with .com where you buy into a company for $500 a share even though they have no earnings? That's kind of a joke, right? So again, jokes do come to an end, and negative yields, I think, is a big joke. Anyway, so what else do you got out there? You've got companies buying back their own stock. Yeah, that's right. $5 billion a day. And between now and the end of the year, there could be an acceleration in that buying. Now, that money could be directed, you know, this is just opinion now, could be directed into what? Wages and benefits increase for the employees. I don't know why the Democrats, if they want to have people think that they want to help them, want to talk about free stuff, where there's so much money in these corporations now, if these wages, which are $9, $10 an hour, $12 an hour, are a total joke, and these companies are making billions and billions, and then they're buying back their own stock with the tax savings, why not jump their salaries up? And then obviously it would increase a consumer spending, which is 2/3 of economic growth. If you had what? Everybody not making 10, but 20 or 30 bucks an hour because the CEO doesn't make 150 million because they're not buying back billions of dollars of their own stock, which is just paper going into paper. And it actually went to citizens that are working and they had more money to spend at the mall. I think that's a much better result than just giveaways and silly talk. But at any rate, they are buying back their stocks and that's what's going on. And it's going on at a tremendous amount of money. So the bottom line is, and the last thing about liquidity, $189 billion came out of stocks and ETFs, I guess, this year, according to what I heard on Bloomberg. And some of that money obviously may come right back in because they feel like they missed the move. So there's a lot of money running out there. And if you wonder where it's coming from, a lot of it's coming from central banks that are buying their own securities, like Japan and the ECB and the Fed. And a lot of it's coming from corporations who basically took their profits and tax savings and are rolling it into buying back their own stocks, which makes the EPS, earning per share, look better. But again, as Buffett says, that's a little bit of financial engineering. So, and again, the thing would be is if the stock market ever did hit a high point and roll over, what's all that value going to be to the company that bought back all their stock? So again, there's some risk to everything that goes on. Let's go over here to the bond market. And this is a big thing because interest rates, you know, people say it's the trade deal. Listen, the only reason this thing has gone up, in my view, is because the Fed did a 360 and they did a parabolic move on interest rates, taking them from 3.25 down to 140 in less than a year. That is a parabolic three standard deviation move. That is outrageous as far as how far it's dropped. Okay. And they put in QE, even though they're calling it not QE, of $60 billion a month. So you take, they were reducing the balance sheet, right? That's tightening. They were hiking interest rates to 3.25, or the 10-year went there. They were hiking spiking it up. That is tightening. And what have they done since then? They have gone to slashing rates and they've gone to QE, $60 billion a month. You have to really guess why the market's had a big run, because the Fed has changed their position 110%. Some trade deal where farmers might get more soybeans and maybe intellectual property might not be stolen and maybe they'll open the banks over the next 5 years. That's not why people are buying. They're buying because they can see that they're forcing you out of money market, because now the rates are way down again in money market and it's going to go back to TINA. There is no alternative. Okay. That's basically, as I see it, what's going on. Now, interest rates though, you know, sometimes you can't play shenanigans all the time. And let's take a look at what I'm talking about there. This is a 1 year graph. Okay. Can you see it? What a huge move. 115 up to 150. Now this is a bond. Bonds don't generally move. Aren't they supposed to be very boring investments? Well, there's nothing boring about going from 115 to 150. What that is basically move. How many people out there who are owning stocks wouldn't mind making 30% on their stocks, right? Well, there you have to have earnings and growth and speculation and all kinds of stuff. Here, you're talking about a fixed income situation by the Treasury, which is the highest credit quality you're going to get because they can print money to pay you back. And you're getting a 30% jump in it. That's out, you know, just totally off the charts. On some of these bonds, normally 5 to 20 years, meaning it averages 5 or 6%. So this year, 30%, doesn't that stick out like a sore thumb? Of course it does, which means it's a very inordinate move in the price. Now, what's going to happen here? Hey, anything can happen in this world, right? We could be going to zero interest rates. And if we start taking out 145 and 150 on this 20-year TLT, I'll start getting into the camp that it could happen, okay? But what also could happen is going back and normalizing such a big, big move. And if we take out 135 on TLT, then I would look for interest rates to be rising and yields to be rising. And that will compete with stocks in 2020. So I would watch TLT very closely. If it starts taking out 145 and 150, obviously that's going to be very accommodative for stocks. And while stocks may have a drop because it might be doing that because of some bad numbers or a bad quarter, it also will be very helpful to stocks because TINA becomes a much larger voice the lower interest rates are in money market. So keep an eye on TLT. If 145, 150, then you got to open that door to the below 1% interest rates possibly. And again, above 135, a 2 to 2.5% 10-year is not off the table by any means. So keep an eye on that right now. It's very, and again, when we got the drop earlier this week, you see this pop, but then when the market got strong, went right back down a little bit. So next week, below 135 or above 145, 150, I think be very key for interest rates. And obviously the cost of money and the accommodation or non-accommodation monetary policy is a huge part of why these markets go up and down. Okay, what else do we have going on here? And on the corporate side, obviously, they just seem to issuing and issuing and issuing. They have record issuance of Japanese dollar bonds this week, twice what it was in 2018. And then you're talking about Europe has just been sprinting to the market issuing debt. And that might be an indication that they don't think these lower rates will last. Again, economies think that the yields go up. And that's something that nobody is really priced in. Because when you get a move, Tom, Dick, and Harry, and everybody is in. So if you got everybody in, and just like last year when we were at 3.25, that's 2018. What did they say 2019 was going to be? Higher interest rates. How'd that work out? Went to 100% the other direction. Well, right now at 150, everyone's talking about zero interest rates, right? Well, that's not happening right now. You got a descending high. You got, if this is a high now, and you take out 135, you got lower high, lower high, lower high, and then you're taking out some lows. So that could change the story, and that's why I'm suggesting you keep an eye on it. Okay, what else do we have going on out there is the U.S. dollar. This could be a story. You're talking about year-end strategies. Keep an eye on this one for next year. These guys want inflation to come back, right? The Fed and the administration is tired of the strong dollar. They'd like to see this dollar go in the tank and get a better deal as far as our percent of profits from the S&P companies come from, would certainly be music to their ears. And so you can see that this thing was up at 99.50. My range on this has been 99 and 95. Okay, that's my range. That's what it's been. See 95 on the downside, 99, a little bit up above it on the upside. That's the range. When that 52-week range breaks substantially, like well under 95, well, you can see, I'll pull the lens back so you can see the longer term picture. Because the U.S. dollar is also a big factor. Let's say we look at the last 10 years. And the reason is why it, you see it at 105, right, in 17. There's your shouldery thing. So we're looking at a little bit of a head and shoulders up here, possibly. So if we don't break above 100 pretty soon and we start taking a 95, you see 95, then the dollar may go way down. And that'll open the door to a couple of things I'm going to talk about right now. So be careful, it goes south. Could be, you know. We're running deficits going through the roof. October's deficit, first month of the new fiscal year, was $134 billion deficit in the budget for the government. So we're running huge deficits, that for your currency. And don't forget, these other currencies have been battered. British pound's in the tank because of Brexit. That could clear up. The euro's been in the tank because of their lousy economies. That could up. And then, of course, the oil has been way down, which has hurt Canada and Australia. That could improve. So things could keep an eye on the dollar. Okay, now, what could also be affected is the price of crude. They just had a meeting. They're talking about cuts. And so they are trying to change the narrative a little bit. And I don't think it's a coincidental at the same time. We were at 59 here, a breakout above this 60 mark. It's trying. The lows seem to be hanging in there. So you get under 55, you know, you might have to change your tune on it. But right now, if it could spike up to 65 or 70, they certainly could sell that Aramco deal a lot better, which comes to market next week. And also, this is a beaten down sector. I mean, the most popular thing to say on TV is that the oil sector has lost money for, or has underperformed. So that's the big mantra. Well, sometimes when things underperform, you know, they stop doing that at some point and they go the other way. So keep an eye on oil because, it looks like they're trying to prop up prices. Next one is gold. And I'll just look at GLD. Okay. My scenario on gold has been pretty good. My scenario is we broke out, in this case, here's the actual spot price of gold. It was 1350 when it broke out. Ran up to 1580. In this case, GLD here, the spider, went up to about 145, 147. Okay, that's way overbought. Just like bonds got way overbought, right? And so what happens then is you tend to go sideways or lower, which is what I was thinking it would do, which is exactly what it has done. And fill in some of these gaps. There's still a gap down here. I don't know. That's your best case scenario, I think, going back to this 120. You know, that's your best case scenario if they tank it under 135, okay? But again, on a longer term basis, you know, do I think that there's still a good possibility on this stuff? I think so. Why? Because if the dollar rolls over, that's going to be good for gold. And if inflation comes back and the interest rates are this low, that's going to be good for gold. In fact, when I started in this investments business back in a long time ago, they had the inflation rate above the interest rate and gold really flew. But certainly inflation and a lower currency is certainly two things that would be helpful to gold. Right now, you don't have that. So that's right now it's digesting all this gains. So again, my feeling is the pullback has three levels, 1450, which we hit and so far has held, 1400, which is door number two, and then 1350 would be a retesting of the breakout point. Those would be three points. If we start seeing 1280 or something like that on gold, then I don't think the party's over. You know, I just don't think it's going to go all the way back there, be so nice to everybody, and then go right back to the highs of 1700 or something like that. So if this is a good market, the three levels that I mentioned, in my view, in my opinion, should hold. Okay. And that's why I'm looking at the gold right now. Last one here before I get into some things that you guys might want to also know about, some individual stocks, soybeans. Okay. We've been hearing the Chinese are coming. You know, you heard of the Russians are coming. Well, this is the Chinese are coming. Basically, they're supposed to buy our stuff and they're supposed to let us into their markets, blah, blah, blah. Well, all line has resistance at $9, which it broke back down, and it has resistance at $9.50, which got up there and broke down. So right now, you've got obviously resistance at $9.40, $9.50. Personally, I'd like to see it go above $9.50 and $10, because when you're looking at this kind of stuff, you'd like to be in there for something big, not just if you're a short-term trader, fine. You've got plenty of action there. You got a nice little drop you could have played. But if you're looking for a longer term trend, you know, something that could give you a little bit of a longer, let's take a look and see if they'll give us a longer. There you go. Okay. So on a 5-year basis, this gives you a little bit of an idea. If I can get my cursor working for me here. Okay. You can see in 2016, it was up at $12. Then it came back down. It's been disintegrating ever since. But you have to admit that the low was hit earlier this year at 8. And I think that's a big number. You start taking that out and you can forget it. And then 850. And now you're at about 875, 870, whatever, right there. So if we can take out 950, it'll open the door to going to where there could be some resistance around 10. But if you really got good reports and it blew through 10, it could open the door to this area up here. Now, if President Trump is going to use the deal with China to his most political advantage, what he might do is keep stringing it along until April and then come out with something that gives everything a jolt going into the election. And if that's the way it works, and they get their big buying in the spring next year, and then for whatever reason, this is speculation, the planting season and the growing season didn't go that well, the combination of the big orders from China and supplies being tight could change the dynamic on this. And I'm very excited about keeping an eye on this, because if it starts getting above 950 and 10, that could be a scenario that unfolds. Again, that's speculation, but certainly it is something that's not off the radar entirely. So keep an eye on soybeans and be patient like you are with the S&P, and hopefully the prices will turn your way. All right. Now, what I'd like to do is go over some of the things that I've been watching and you guys can watch too. First thing is in the area of bio, been going big. And one of the ones I've been watching is Biogen, which is working on that Alzheimer's drugs. And obviously every citizen in the world would love them to come up with something for that, because anyone who's had a relative afflicted by it certainly would love nothing more than to have some type of medicine for it. So Biogen has been on its way up a little bit. And if they can do anything with this in the years to come, this would be something I would keep an eye on. It's a very volatile stock, as you can see, but if they can cure, or not cure, but do something to, you know, address the Alzheimer's situation, this thing could be a very, very big long run. For those of you who are looking at a pharmaceutical bet, obvious there, whether they continue or not, there's some resistance here, so obviously it may pull back towards the 110 area and then go if it's a good market, but keep an eye on the pharmaceutical. There are some smaller companies out there that I've kept on a look at. ALLO, and it had a good day on Friday, up $6.30. I'm looking at this thing on a five-year basis. Let's cut it down to a one-year. Obviously, most people are shorter-term trading, so those of you who are that are shorter-term trading can notice that there's been a little bit of a breakout here, right? So keep an eye on ALLO. Something looks like it's going to happen. 30 looks like a technical support. And obviously, if it takes out 34, it would be into new all-time, new 52-week highs. So there's one right there that I've kept an eye on. And there's another one, AKRO, which also had a pretty good day on Friday. And that was up about 4% on Friday. And this one here, as you can see, is trying to get above this 24 number. And looks like it's got some momentum going as well. So you got AKRO. Obviously, it's a sector that's getting money thrown at it. So that's why you got to keep an eye on it. Let's see what else we got here for you. Okay, what about in the energy sector? You know, these things seem to be getting a bid right now. Which ones? SLB, up almost 3% Friday. It looks like if it gets above this 38, looks like it could do something. So keep an eye on that. Again, you might not be able to hold these things forever, but there could be a trade involved. Halliburton was another one. And Halliburton up, trying to break out above 22. Looks like it's doing that. And it looks like it's got a nice little roundness to it. And Friday had a pretty good percent of the day. Nothing wrong with that. So keep an eye on that. There seems to be some momentum building there. You can see it's way off its 52-week high. Okay, where else are we? How about USO? That was another one that had some pretty good days on Friday. And that was up 1%, not as much as the others, but looks like it's trying to go someplace down here. So keep an eye on it. And another one, let's see here, what else? And then there's also the big yielding ones like British Petroleum, which, you know, dividends can be cut, but, you know, that's a pretty healthy dividend right there. And it was up 1.2% on Friday. Royal Dutch, again, a healthy dividend, was up pretty good on Friday. And there is a gap there. I don't know if it's going to ever get into that gap, but there's a gap right there to 62. It tried to get in there, failed, but, you know, a little bit here. You have to be careful, put these things on a short leash, maybe limited risk call, something like that. And even the bigger one, Chevron, I think it had a big day. Yeah, up pretty good, up 118. Looks like it's trying to go someplace. Keep an eye on it. Pays a good dividend. Hey, listen, you know, when they pay dividends and you buy them and you hold on to them, at least you're getting a decent dividend while you're holding on, seeing if it works at all. As long as it's not going down, you're getting a pretty good cash flow from the dividend. So there's nothing wrong with that. Another dividend player that people say if you want to hide out, if there's a correction, is Pfizer. And Pfizer is almost 3.75, something like that on the dividend. There's a gap on Pfizer there right under 42. I don't know if it's going to try to go for that. But, you know, if it gets above this area here, getting into that gap or getting in towards 40, certainly not out of the question. So keep an eye on that. That That's another drug company. And then there was a company in the financial area that looked like it had some activity going on, which is Bright House Networks. And Bright House Networks was up 3.5%, and it's in the financial sector. It filled that gap, so you'd like to see it, but it did jump pretty good Friday. It was in there, like it should not take out 38, and it's about 10% above that, or $2 above that, so that's not. And another health company, SYNH, was up 2.5%, and you can see there, it looks like it's trying to break out above 55, and it's down in the aftermarket, so be careful of that. Again, all of these companies and others, obviously, will be affected by what happens on December 15th. If he says, I'm putting tariffs on, and everybody decides that's not good, and they want to get out, again, there's a lot of real estate on some of these stocks underneath it because they've had big runs. That real estate can get filled in, okay? So, you know, put that in there with a grain of salt. But if this thing is not going to pull back and these things are going to keep going, these are some of them that might be worth taking a look. RH in the consumer discretionary, up almost 4%. You can see that one's certainly getting a bid. People are very high on this because of their profits and expanding. So this is something that people are keeping an eye on. Clearly, you know, breaking out to new all-time, or not all-time, I don't know about all-time highs, but 52-week highs. And another one is Williams-Sonoma, that high-end company that got a little bit of a... Williams-Sonoma was up over 3% on Friday, and it looks like it's trying to go someplace, but there's resistance above. But you want to keep an eye on something that goes up 3% in a day to see if it's going to have continuation. It's a little bit of a momentum play, and you're kind of hoping that the momentum will continue. Then there's a game company called Scientific Games, SGMS, and that company was up over 3.5% on Friday, and that's coming out of a correction there at around 26. And see if this thing could get back on its bicycle if that correction is over. It did try to come down to these tops here around 24 and went down to 26, and now it's come back up a little bit. So that had pretty good action Friday, so I thought that might be interesting to keep an eye on for people looking for a little momentum. In the tech sector, Sun Power, PWR, that was up over 2%. It's a cheapie, you know, it's a low price stock. Doesn't mean it's any good, but it has done all the correcting here, filling in that gap. And so, you know, if it gets above 8 or something like that, but that's, you know, obviously a company that's on the defensive. So, you know, I personally wouldn't be too keen on that, but I did see it had a decent jump on Friday. And let's see what else we got here. Wayfair, you know, people do like things at a discount. You know, look at Walmart and Target, right? They're the ones getting the money, in Costco, right? So this stuff, this place here, you know, kind of gets you some cheap stuff. It was up 6% on Friday, and it is coming off of a correction. So I don't know if it's just going to fill that gap, but if it gets above 90, that's not a bad base. And so, again, there was some action on a Friday, and I thought it'd be worthwhile to at least take a look and see. Let's look at it on a 10-day basis. Oh, there you go. On a 10-day basis, it's had a pretty good pop coming out of here. Again, you know, 86 is some rate, but keep on it because it had gained some momentum Friday. I don't know if there'll be follow-through or not some on a Friday. And Constellation Brands, for those people who want to get exposed to the vices of marijuana, that was up a little bit on Friday. And again, this is one that is very, very diversified. Let's see if that is. Let's go back to 1 year. And if you look at it on a 1 year basis, you can see that it had the drop here. So if we can get above 190, you know, maybe that drop is over. I have to see. There's a gap here above 200. And so those of you who are looking at the Bitcoin, like to look at GBTC. Take a quick look at the Bitcoin, guys. And that's at $9. It was up 2% on Friday. Let's see what the chart looks like. Oh, yeah. So anyway, is this the low at 8? We'll have to find out. But, you know, that looks like it's trying to do a little bit of a low. A break above 10 would be very nice. And then, of course, you know, that's exposure to the Bitcoin situation. And let's see what else I got here. Oh, yeah. In the REIT area, you know, there's different REITs out there that you can take a look at. Some people like to hide out in REITs if they think the market might roll over. It's a defensive position. So you've got a REIT at Vanguard as an example that went down to 90 and now looks like it's trying to turn up a little bit with a decent yield. You got one over at, it is FREL. And that one, again, is starting to try to turn up. If it does, it's got a reasonable yield basis what you're going to get in other areas. And you even have one for Invesco has a China one. Let's see what that looks like. And that one, obviously, show much on it. But for those who want exposure, there's a ETF for that, just like the show says, right? Okay, so there gives you a little bit of an idea of some of the stuff going on around the horn. And what I'd like to do now is also go over some of the popular ones. But before that, let's look at the gold situation. You got GDX, and that's your gold miners, okay? So we had a big run-up in GDX, right? And right now, it looks like it is trying to hold the 26 area. But if it breaks, it could go to the 24 area and 23 and a half because there's a gap there, and these highs here. So if we were to break under 26, I would start really monitoring the 2350 to 24 area as an entry area, providing it stopped going down and gave you some indication like this at the bottom that it's turning, right? So right now, if we break above 28, that would be an indication that it might be turning. And if we break down under 26 and the headline is gold tanks, gold's no good. Well, of course, that's when the prices are going to be better for the buyer, right? So 2350 and 2400 would be the neighborhood to start monitoring to see if you can get some kind of a base and then look for some kind of a turn and then possibly get involved at that point. The juniors, those are the ones that are going to move a little bit faster because they're smaller cap gold stocks, GDXJ. They again, and consolidation, like I told you on the gold, you had a huge consolidation. Did you get consolidation pullback? Now, where's some of the better points that you could get into this thing? Obviously, 36 looks to be a very good support area, but if it breaks and the news gets bad, you got to figure 32 to 34. Fills that gap, goes and tests this area here, 34, 32, and then monitor it, and then see if you get a turn. Again, if you're going to buy the gold, it's generally, unless you're trading it short term, like again, we had a good drop here, but again, it might be best to use this on a longer term basis as a percentage of a portfolio that hedges against currency risk, hedges against inflation risk. Obviously, everyone says there is no inflation and it's never coming back. That popularity of opinion is scary on its own. And the U.S. dollar has been very strong, but it has been very strong and it has vulnerability if these other countries turn around a little bit. Some people are saying emerging markets is something to be very much interested in for next year. This is another thing for next year. Well, let's look at EEM. And if the dollar drops, this might be the way to go. Right? 39 on the downside. You pop up, you pull back to 40. Don't take out 39. You pop up, you pull back. Here's the low and the high right there. Hangs in there. Boom. And then you want to use moving averages. Take a look at them. Look at the short interest. 14% short. That's a lot of people